libertarians, anarchists, conservatives, and old guys with a cannon in their front yard. This is Jonesing for Liberty, and I'm your host, Rod Jones. Don't forget, we are a project of Bipartisan Media. You can find out more about us and our organization at bipartisanmedia.com. That's bipartisanmedia.com. My email that you can contact me and the show through is bipartisanpodcast@gmail.com. That's bipartisanpodcast@gmail.com if you would like to contact us. And I'm very excited because joining me today is J. Daniel Richer, a independent journalist who is trying to build a new platform based on... What did you say it was about, J. Daniel?
Subversiveness,
and I'm really excited to delve into that. But first, before we do that, as always, we have our current events section. Before we jump into that, however, J. Daniel, could you just tell a bit about yourself to the audience?
Yeah. So, my political journey started at Minarchist, then I became an ANCAP, and I don't really exactly identify with ANCAPs anymore. In terms of just like, because it's all theory and not, you know,
right.
How can I get more liberty now and stuff like that. But right now, I'm just focused on developing my platform, Undermine News, which you can access at undermine.news, which will be launching the 24th of this month, as well as this, I don't know what to call it yet, but it's a database of, it's an open source database of political strategy.
Sounds pretty interesting to me, and we'll get more into that later in the interview. So that's what you have to look forward to for anyone who's listening. Moving on to our current events section, the first story that we're going to talk about today is how reportedly, according to Bloomberg, President Donald Trump has said that the U.S. will lift steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada and Mexico in an effort to encourage lawmakers to ratify a new North American trade deal. According to Bloomberg, he said, quote, "I'm pleased to announce that we've just reached an agreement with Canada and Mexico and will be selling our product into those countries without the imposition of tariffs or major tariffs," Trump said in an event Friday. Quote, "Hopefully, Congress will approve the USMCA quickly." So there's not much more to this story, basically just talking about how the steel and aluminum tariffs are going to be removed from Canada and Mexico. And I, for one, really believe that this will have a good effect on not only our relations with those countries, but all of our collective economies here in the North American continent as well. And we'll be getting more into tariffs in the next news story, but before we do that, J. Daniel, do you have anything to say on this issue?
Yeah, I think these tariffs going away is a great thing because tariffs are just basically taxes and kind of just mess with the free market, which technically doesn't exist, but yes.
Right, yeah. And what most people don't understand who are advocates of tariffs or that they do understand but just don't care is that tariffs, contrary to popular belief, are not a tax on other countries. Other countries and other and foreign companies are not paying these taxes. In fact, directly as consumers, we are paying these taxes as tariffs. And in addition to that, private U.S. companies are also paying these tariffs. So we have U.S. citizens and U.S. companies paying these tariff taxes, not foreign governments, not foreign companies, and not foreign citizens. So it's really just a tax on Americans to promote American business, which to me seems counterintuitive. But do you have anything else to say on this specific news story before we move on to the next tariff story? J. Daniel?
No, that's about it.
Alright, yeah. And so moving on, our next story is about small businesses and their continual struggle with these tariffs. So, according to the Washington Post, on Friday, yesterday actually, according to the Washington Post, there are lots of small tech businesses that are being deeply affected by these tariffs, and they're in addition, Amazon is taking this opportunity to, actually not taking this opportunity, because of the tariffs, because of the new tariffs, these companies, these tech companies, and these manufacturers in America are having to pay higher prices for the goods that they use to manufacture their products, which means that they have to raise their prices in turn in order to make sure that they're still profitable. And not, they've lost a lot of business because of this, but another issue they have to contend with now, according to the Washington Post, is Amazon. Because Amazon also has a thin profit margin, and they are not going, and they are not lowering, they are not accepting these higher prices that these companies are charging. So it means that Amazon is going to be not, Amazon, according to the Washington Post, isn't accepting these higher prices from these U.S. manufacturers, which means that these manufacturers are losing a large part of their business. Do you have anything to say on this, J. Daniel?
No.
No. All right. I mean, yeah, there's pretty much not, there's not much else to say about it. It's pretty straightforward for the most part. disappointing, but straightforward nonetheless. So, our final current events story before we move on to our Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness segment, our Liberty Theory segment, is Iran tells militias to prepare for a proxy war. And this is according to The Guardian. Iran's most prominent military leader has recently met Iraqi militias in Baghdad and told them to prepare for proxy war. Two senior intelligence sources said that Qassem Soleimani, the leader of Iran's powerful Quds force, summoned the militias under Tehran's influence 3 weeks ago, amid a heightened state of tension in the region. The move to mobilize Iran's regional allies is understood to have triggered fears in the U.S. that Washington's interests in the Middle East are facing a pressing threat. So, basically, this is obviously in response to, of course, the mounting tensions with Iran. I mean, Iran threatened us, we threatened them, now we're moving Navy units in and a carrier group, and troops are gearing up. So Iran's obviously not too happy about that, and I think most Americans aren't either. So this particular story really is just the latest in a series of stories about ramping up tensions with Iran. So, G. Daniel, what's your take on this?
Honestly, I don't really pay much attention to things that are kind of like outside the United States, unless it's like something happening in the UK that's funny. So, not really any comment on that.
Okay. Yeah, but it is kind of scary because you have all these tensions mounting. I mean, the U.S. has sent an entire carrier group, for heaven's sake. That's, you know, not just aircraft carrier, but the whole carrier group. So that means all of the warships that escort the carrier and everything, all going over to sit right off Iran's coast. And I'm probably not in a position to comment on how things are going to turn out, just because it's really uncertain at this time. But that's the whole thing. It's very uncertain what's going to happen with Iran. So with that, let's move on to our next segment, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness. And in today's segment, we're going to be talking about a really interesting issue, state splits, and we'll get more into that after the open.
That they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Alright, so, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, our Liberty Theory segment. Today's discussion, splitting states, is it a viable option for protecting liberty, and what exactly are the ideals and how are these movements working? So today we'll be discussing the two most prominent ones. I don't personally know of any others other than California and Illinois. So basically the scoop behind this is, if any of you have followed me for a while, I wrote an article on this quite some time ago on the Student Post, and you can find my articles, as always, at studentpost.com/author/Rod Jones. So that's studentpost.com studentpost.org/author/Rod Jones, all smushed together. That's where you can find my articles, as usual. And these, and I wrote an article on the state of Jefferson, so first we'll cover the California state split movement, the state of Jefferson. So, in case you haven't read my article, the basic deal behind the state of Jefferson movement is Northern California and a small part of Southern Oregon basically consider themselves at this point a separate state in everything but legality. I mean, they have a completely different culture than the rest of California and Oregon, and they are severely under, especially Northern California, is severely underrepresented in California's state assembly and state senate. And of course, the northern part of California and the southern part of Oregon are all much more conservative than the rest of the states. So there's a variety of reasons behind why they want to, but basically the whole movement is the state of Jefferson movement seeks to form a new state out of the southern part of Oregon and Northern California called Jefferson. And it's been in the works for quite some time. In fact, the movement, according to the founder, the movement really started back in 1948. But in actuality, the main thrust of it started, I believe, in the 80s and 90s. And it's been going for some time now, and it's actually recently gained steam. However, it's been blocked in a lot of state and district courts. And their case is, as I said before, to create a new state. They're facing a lot of adversity in this, though, obviously, from the government, because even though there's precedent of two states splitting beforehand, before this, the state of Jefferson would take a good chunk out of California's electoral votes in the Electoral College, among other things, tax revenue, and a lot of the agriculture from California would also leave. So, obviously the state has a vested interest in not wanting the state of Jefferson to separate. But that's basically the rundown behind it. And then if we move over to Illinois, there apparently, this was news to me, I learned just a few days ago, Illinois wants to split itself into two states. According to governing.com, activists in the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico have been pushing for statehood for decades, but they aren't the only ones who aspire to create a 51st state. Many rural, often conservative, residents of large Democratic-controlled states are tired of being overshadowed politically, culturally, and economically by big cities. They've tried legislation, elections, and even redistricting. The problems can't be solved by traditional means, they say, so why not just use a tool built into the U.S. Constitution? Create a new state out of an existing state through approval of both the state legislature and Congress. And so this is kind of what the state of Jefferson has been trying to do as well. So the two precedents for this are when Maine split from, let's see, what was that? Maine split from Massachusetts in 1820, and West Virginia split from Virginia in 1863 during the Civil War. So, apparently, the main controversy surrounding the Illinois state split is Chicago. So, in Illinois, a resolution calling on Congress to declare Chicago the 51st state has 8 Republican co-sponsors in the State House. There are 44 Republicans in the lower chamber in support among many of the state's conservative activists. It's the second such bill in as many years. So basically what we have here is, it's pretty funny actually, because the state of Jefferson one is you know, a large portion of the state wants to separate. But and really, California is too big, so I support that movement. But in Illinois, they literally just want to kick Chicago out of Illinois. So it's not so much a split as a corralling off of Chicago from the rest of the state, which I actually find quite amusing, because just because people appear to hate Chicago so much. You know, there's so much a stigma around it that the rest of the state wants it to become its own little separate city-state. So that's kind of interesting. J. Daniel, what do you have to say on this?
I kind of love it. Like, it's pretty beautiful, this idea of a secession. Although I think a lot of people would disagree with that statement, even though the United States is like a group of 50 states, you know,
right,
under the federal government. But, and they're all, these are like the same people that say they're just trying to divide and conquer us. Like, even if we were united, that means that we would have to compromise, and no one wants to do that. So I don't think like Democrats and Republicans living like under the same state is gonna work out.
Yeah, no, especially when especially in these movements are mostly in states where there's a Democratic majority, and they really just overrule all the Republicans in the state on everything. So that's the main reason why these movements are happening. So the main question is, are these a viable option for protecting liberty?
I think it would be, because New Hampshire is pretty libertarian state. They had the Free State Project, so where they basically a bunch of libertarians flooded the state and really made the live free and or die slogan legit. So I think if another state wants to, you know, break up and do their own thing, they should be quote unquote allowed to do so.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so I really think that's a great movement. And to be clear for our listeners, these states don't want to become separate countries, just separate states under the same union. So I yes. think this is great. Really applaudable these efforts, and it really is interesting to see. Well, sad but interesting. How these movements keep getting blocked by the Democratic legislatures, because obviously they don't want to lose a chunk of their state. So, yeah, that's quite interesting. So let's move on to a quick commercial break before we continue to our interview segment. With so much content whizzing around out there, there's only one storytelling platform that helps keep you calm, stay informed, and inspired. Flipboard. Flipboard curates the world's stories so that you can be smarter in your work, life, and play. Choose from thousands of topics to personalize Flipboard and get the latest stories from the best publishers and experts delivered to you 24/7. When you see stories that you want to save or share, tap the plus button to add them to private or public collections. It's that simple. Used by millions of people every day, Flipboard is how people move themselves and the world forward. Get started now at flipboard.com. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show into all the apps people like to listen on? How do I make money for my podcast? The answer to every one of these questions is really simple: Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means that you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by recording this ad. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast. Jonesing for Liberty. I'm your host, Rod Jones. And with me today, once again, is J. Daniel Richer. And we are moving on to the next segment of our show, the guest discussion, our interview segment, if you will. And I have a lot of great questions today, and I think we're going to have a great discussion. So, first off, Daniel, just tell us about your writing and your projects you're working on real quick.
All right. I started, you know, getting like kind of serious about writing after I flew back from this coding boot camp that I guess you could say I either got kicked out or left. And so I actually went the opposite route of like the learn to code meme. I went from like coding to journalism, I guess you could say. So now at first I just started writing about things that interested me, which were mostly political-ish or like free speech or 3D printed gun related. And then I would submit those to publications like which is a Foundation for Economic Education,
right?
Or this other place called Reclaim the Net, which is a really cool site that really has stuff that I care about, like free speech happenings in terms of like not only like government but like corporate censorship or social media censorship, as well as privacy and stuff like that.
All right, and so what is the overall goal of your writing?
I would say that my goal is pretty selfish, actually. I pretty much write for myself just to like get it out onto out of my system and like into the world. That's like just like a plus for it. There's like this thing inside of me that just wants to produce content. I just, you know, got tired of, because I used to like basically do nothing with my life, and I was like, no, we're not doing this anymore, J. Daniel, we gotta change. So yeah, I started producing instead of consuming. So I'd say that my goal is just to report on subversive technologies and strategies, and just learn from people who are like anarchistic in nature.
All right. So, what kind of writing do you do for the Foundation for Economic Education? And real quick, before you answer, for any of our listeners who haven't heard of them, this is an excellent organization that I follow regularly because they have some great articles on there. The Foundation for Economic Education, or the FEE. So, J. Daniel, what kind of writing do you do for the FEE?
I wouldn't say I write for them anymore, but I would just contribute articles about 3D printed guns. I think I had like three, I don't know, there might be more. But they were mostly about dispelling myths about 3D printed guns. So I got in contact good internet friends with like the 3D printed gun Twitter, like Realm, who are currently being like picked off one by one by Jack, basically at this point.
Yeah.
I found this thread. They're like, anyone, any journalist who wants to write about 3D printed guns should contact us, because we actually like 3D print guns ourselves, and we're not just like some guy who's claiming to be an expert on guns. Because like beforehand, there was tons of articles about 3D printed guns that were just false and full of just untruths and super biased and just plain old wrong. So yeah, I just responded to that thread really fast, and I got in contact with Ivan, who I guess is like the face of this decentralized anonymous decentralized 3D printed gun group. Like activist group, I guess you could say, called Deterrence Dispense, which is kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but what's it called? Defense Distributed by Cody Wilson. It's not affiliated with them. Yeah. So it's kind of like their own thing. They do their own thing. They're independent from that. And I was able to basically interview him like in a text form about 3D printed guns and like the truth behind them. And I learned a few things too about like the origins of 3D printed guns, like what the first one was, and how they actually are detectable in terms of the firing pin, bullets, stuff like that.
Right. So for some of our less libertarian listeners who might be skeptical about 3D printed guns and why they should be allowed. What's your answer to people who don't want 3D printed guns to be a thing, and or don't want them to be distributed, or don't want the ability to make them available to the average person? What's your response to that?
Okay. So there's this reality, which is like, I guess you'd say the objective reality. And then there's this also, this other reality, which is your view of the objective reality. And the thing is, like, you don't really get to like use the word allow, because you can't really stop it. It's basically, it's free speech now, because I think the Supreme Court in like the 90s, around the time of like the code wars, which you can look up, they said that like code is free speech, and that's basically what all like what the files are. So you can't really not support 3D. Well, you can't support free speech and not support printing 3D printed guns. Really, it's like tied. It's one and one. You can't pick and choose anymore.
All right. So let's move on to Undermine News. What is Undermine News?
Okay. So Undermine News is my new platform that's launching on the 24th, which is the same day that the first Telegraph message was sent. Undermine News is this journalistic platform that I'm starting, which is focused on pretty niche stuff, but it's mostly just things that undermine power structures, really, like corporations, governments, the media, whatever. Just stuff that really changes the game, because I think that's what attracts me to these political things, is when it's just radically different. I don't know, it's just like something inside of me. I just love it.
Right. So is this going to be kind of like a Project Veritas related thing, or is it going to be more is it going to be kind of like a Project Veritas kind of thing, or what exactly is it going to entail?
I'm not really 100% familiar with Project Veritas. I kind of know a little bit about them, but it's mostly going to be just like reporting on like new technologies and happenings in the space where things get undermined, and then some opinion pieces on that in the political strategy, like what they should do next, what things that they should use, what they should do to counteract that, what might happen, how to protect yourself, stuff like that.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I for one cannot wait for that to come out. So is it just going to be you, or will you have a small group of people working on Undermine News?
I think at first it's just going to be me, and then I'll let people start, you know, contributing articles. I can't really like afford to pay anyone or anything like that.
Right, so it's going to be more of a volunteer kind of thing. What do you do you see any earning potential in this? Like, is this going to be something that you will build to help support yourself, or are you going to be writing for other sources as well during this time?
I'm basically going to put all my attention into Undermine News and the database, which I'll talk about in a bit. But I just don't like any form of monetization model for like online sites. Like they all suck. Like they're all in your face and stuff like that. Or it's like sketchy, like ad networks. Those can get blocked. Those can get, you know, undermined. You know, stuff like that. It's just right. Always a way to get around it. And then, not cryptojacking, because that's another unethical. But it's like where you mine like Monero or whatever on the visitor's computer, but you ask for permission, and I looked into that, and I was like, nope.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what I'm going to do, if I'm going to monetize or if I'm not.
Okay. So you mentioned the database. Can you tell us more on that?
Yeah, so I don't have a fancy name for it yet or anything. I don't know, maybe people can come up with something, but I guess I call it a OS Polystrat for open source political strategy, which is more or less this database that is it's on Airtable. It just like, which is like I guess Google Sheets on steroids, more or less. But it's a place where anyone can, you know, submit an issue they have, like something, so I don't know, just something that bugs them about the world that they'd like to see changed, like facial recognition software, like how do I beat it, how do I get it banned, like whatever, or like you know, how do I do free speech stuff if I keep getting deplatformed by like social media giants. And then there'd be like tabs for maybe they're called what's it called, not columns, rows, where you can upload PDFs, you know, words, images. Right now it's pretty empty because I'm spending more time writing articles than paying attention to it, but it's basically all set. And it's open source in that anyone can just like download it as like a CSV file and then upload it to Airtable and you know, add their own stuff to it and like basically submit like a pull request to me by emailing that file, and then if I like it, I'll update the, you know, the database that I have. And you know, if I don't, you know, too bad, too sad. Just buy your own.
Well, hey, that sounds really cool.
Yeah. I'm just interested in like indexing like all, especially the political strategies that don't involve the state like at all. I love learning about that stuff. I want to learn like everything about it, and it's just something that I wish existed like 2 years, like maybe like a year ago. So that's kind of when I had this idea. And I was like, why hasn't anyone done this before? Right. But you know, maybe they think it's too dangerous.
Well, moving past under my news and onto more general libertarianism questions. So, what is the most common argument that you hear against libertarianism?
Okay, well, most arguments against libertarianism are not actual arguments. They're mostly like straw men and what's it called, like gish galloping. We're like, oh, well, what if someone builds? No, what if someone buys all the property around your house, and then like they'll answer that question, and then they'll add something to this theoretical about the theoretical, and it just gets insane. But I'd say like the biggest valid criticism would be like NAP criticisms, or just like criticisms about what is it called, like I don't know what the best valid criticism is.
All right. So, what is the best argument for libertarianism that you can think of?
Not wanting to be controlled, not wanting to be tracked, not wanting to be watched, not wanting to be monitored, not wanting to be just owned, I guess.
Right, yeah. So, are there any portions of the Libertarian Party platform that you disagree with?
There actually isn't. I basically became a libertarian, or identified as a libertarian, when I in 2016, when there was this like class election kind of thing at a high school, and they're like Trump, Hillary, and then they're like Gary Johnson. I was like, oh, hold up. I was like, who is this guy? So I was like, wait, Libertarian Party, that's a thing? Because like up until that point, I really thought it was just Democrats and Republicans, and like right. Just a whole bunch of like woke centrists looking down on people. But yeah, so you know, I just scrambled home. I was like, I gotta research this. So you know, I looked up Gary Johnson, and then like the Libertarian Party, and then I fell down like a rabbit hole, and that's basically how I got here. But yeah, I basically agree with everything the Libertarian Party platform says.
All right, so you mentioned how you got involved with the libertarianism. How did you get involved in journalism?
Okay, so I, in the coding boot camp that I went to, I was like all in. I was like, I'm going to get all this stuff. I'm going to do all this stuff. And then like my dreams kind of came crashing down when I realized that I don't really like the process. I just like the end result. And you know, I just struggled to like really like grasp things and learn during that process. But you know, I'd do it all again. Honestly, it was fun. But what was the question again?
How did you get involved with journalism?
Okay. Yeah. So after I flew home like early, when my friends were still like two weeks before the thing ended, I wrote this like Medium article about the stuff that I learned, and I also pushed my first pull request to, which was just like a list of sites where you can what's it called? Like basically wireframes, and like I got people were like sharing it in like the Slack thing, and they're saying it was good. I was like, wait, what do you mean it's good? Like, cause like my whole like public school, my whole time spent at public school, I got the impression that I sucked at writing because of like the grading system and stuff like that. And oh, you have to write about this. You have to write it in this way, and you have to say this, and you can't, it, you know, like super restrictive and just not fun in general. But when I realized that, you know, I can write about whatever I want and share it with the world instantly and get, you know, positive or negative feedback and, you know, really influence people, you know, nothing could stop me at that point.
Yes, it's pretty neat. And for our listeners who happen to be high school or college students, any of them, or around that age group, even if you're not attending a college, I encourage you to go to studentpost.org, because that is where, I've probably talked about this on the show many times before, but it's where the home of the Student Post, which is, they're all about student writers and getting whatever message you want to be heard out there, current events as well as more non-current event, more political science type of thing. Really, lots of really interesting articles in there. So if you're a high school or college student, I encourage you, listeners, to go and apply there, because they're a really great organization. And for anyone who's not in that age group or who's not interested in writing for them, I encourage you to sign up for their email list, because there are many, very many good articles on there. And so, J. Daniel, you mentioned something interesting. You were talking about the public school system and how basically it made you believe that you were terrible at writing, and yet here you are, a professional journalist. So this kind of leads into the more deeper question about our public school system and how much it's actually helping our students. Because a lot of the times now, especially among high schoolers, I've noticed, there are a lot of there are a lot of people who are talking about the system, and there will always be students who are complaining about schoolwork, that's nothing new. But now I've seen it shift to more where they're complaining that they're not learning anything that will be, or not anything, but that they aren't learning as much as they would like of things that they just need to know to live life in a first world country, like finances, personal finance, and that kind of thing. So do you have anything else to say on that, or?
Oh, absolutely. So, like, I realized that basically, you know, like, younger kids in, like, elementary, they're, like, psyched for school. They love it. And then, like, you get to, like, middle school, and I guess you're kind of learning, I guess. I guess you could classify that as learning. But at least new stuff. But, like, once you get to high school, it's just, they're just repeating stuff at that point, and they're just giving you busy work. And it's like, stop. Why am I here?
Right.
So, yeah, I definitely agree that they should be teaching more relevant stuff, like, you know, how to do taxes, like, you know, teach about the Federal Reserve, actually, stuff like that, like credit cards, like money, financial literacy, not just like, oh, just save up, like a good book on that would be Rich Dad Poor Dad, because if you take advice from like your parents on you know, what should I do financially? You're just going to end up in the same, I guess you'd say, class slot as them, and which is fine if that's what you want to do. But if you want to, like, be rich, you probably should not do that. And which also ties into this thing that I'm in right now, because I dropped out of community college, maybe 2 months in. I don't know. It felt fast. Like, it was fast. Because I realized that I have no idea why I was there. I was just there because I felt compelled, I guess, maybe psychologically by, my pro-college parents to just, you know, go to college. Like, that's the default. That's how you find out what you want to do and all that stuff. Which you actually end up paying. You're basically just paying to figure out, what you want to do. And you're just taking these, at least I was taking these gen ed classes, which sucked. And actually, I was in this literacy class, which I thought was going to be like Shakespearean, but it was just Marxist and feminist literature, which I was like, wait, why am I that's when I was like, all right, I got to drop out. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
And I'm also, so now I'm in this this program called Praxis, which you can check out at discoverpraxis.com. But it's like a 12-month entrepreneurial boot camp. And for the first 6 months, they train you on personal branding, just stuff that's really relevant to the workforce now, not something that's more boomerized, I guess you could say, but just stuff like how to get a job without a degree. That's their thing. This is really what drew me to them. This concept that there's only two things that matter, which is your ability to create value and your ability to display that value to an employer. So, and then at the end, the last 6 months of it, you get paired up with the startup. I'm doing marketing, but I'm kind of interested in sales now, but I don't know. But you get paired up with this business partner, and you get paid $15 an hour. And at the end of it, there's a 90% chance that you get hired from that. And it's just, I think it's just a great program. I'm starting in August though, so.
Very nice, very nice. Well, good luck to you on that. So as we're sort of getting ready to close up today's show, I know it was a bit on the short side, listeners, but unfortunately there wasn't a whole lot in the news cycle this week. So before we start wrapping this up, what is one last thing you want the audience to know?
Don't talk about anything that you don't know about, that's for sure. Don't really trust anyone. You should pretend to trust people, but take steps, just in case.
Don't put blind faith in people.
Yeah. Especially with anyone like Zuck. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jay Daniel, for coming on today's show. It was a really interesting conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Enjoyed it. And as we wrap up here, I just want to remind our listeners of a few links. I'll be putting all these links in the details of the show. If you are listening on a computer or mobile device, go to that. And don't forget to check out Bipartisan Media at bipartisanmedia.com. Again, the student post is studentpost.org, and you can find my articles there at studentpost.org/author/Rod Jones. You can find Jay Daniel at his he has a personal site, kind of like a blog kind of thing, called jdanielrichard.com. That's jdanielrichard.com. His Undermine News that he was talking about is undermine.news. Again, that's undermine.news. And go and I believe Jay Daniel, that if you go to the website, you can sign up to receive a notification when it finally launches.
Yep, that is correct.
All right, so go there, do that, because that is going to be an amazing project. And then, of course, we mentioned the Foundation for Economic Education. That's FEE.org, because that's another great organization. And so that pretty much wraps up today's show. Again, thanks for coming on. And listeners, don't forget to email me and contact me via bipartisanpodcast@gmail.com. That's bipartisanpodcast@gmail.com. And patronize our sponsors, because that means that we get more money. So, as always, that I have been Rod Jones. This has been Jonesing for Liberty. I will see you next week.